Victor Barton, Reel 2.
While we're stationed up near North Allerton, it had come out that there was volunteers wanted for a parachute regiment that would train at Ringway in Manchester, a shilling a day extra, and everything like that, all the perks, civvy billets. So I thought, I want some of that. So I go into the company commander's office, and he said, "What do you want, Burton?" And I said, "I want a volunteer for the parachute." He said, "You have no chance." He said, "You're a skilled MT driver. You're a skilled motorman." He said, "You have no chance. Get out." So that was one thing. I was thinking I was going to get near Manchester and be home with a wife and have a good time. Although I don't think I'm very fond of heights. But anyway, that didn't come off. But I did get promoted to MT Corporal. And I was all right with that for a year or so. And then we had to get a new MT sergeant. So there's me and an old reservist in for it. So anyway, he didn't know who to pick between us. So I thought, well, he's older than me. He's been a reservist. So I said, well, let Scullion have it. Let Corporal Scullion have it. So he made him sergeant, which was all right by me because you're a pal of mine. But the point was, later on, I was MT call for a D company, and the D company commander wanted me to put me a sergeant at duty. And I said, well, sir, I am enough experience to lead a platoon in action because I've always been with the MT and mortars. So, he said, no, you'll be all right. I said, anyway, I decided I wouldn't do that because my dad was a platoon sergeant and he's led his men by example. So I asked for an interview with the company, with the CO. So I goes into the CO and he said, what do you want? And I said, I want to revert to private and go back on the driving. He said, why? I said, well, in D company they want to promote me to sergeant duty and I don't think I've enough experience for a platoon sergeant. So the CO said, well, we'll send you to Caterham, that was a guards thing, for some training. I said, no, sir. Oh, I said, and when the CO said that, the new RSM, who I didn't know really, he said, about turn, I didn't about turn. So he's going blue in the face, and the CO said, it's all right, Sergeant Major. I know, Burns. Well, we'd been together at Dunkirk because he were a company commander then, and we got on very well. So he said, if that's what you want, Burton, we'll send you back to driving. So that's how I finished being MT Corporal, although I had a chance to be MT Sergeant, but give it up for a good cause. And then they wanted to make me a sergeant to company commander, platoon commander, and I didn't fancy that at all because I don't think I'd enough experience. I'd always been on the specialist side, mortars and MT. So I went back to being driving a three tonner. I thought, well, I've got a good job here now. But just before the invasion, of course, I was called back to the mortars for my experience. A pal of mine who'd been made sergeant to the mortars asked for me to go and drive his mortar truck. So that's how we went on the invasion.
What type of vehicles did you drive during that period?
Three tonners in the cook house vans and all sorts. 1,500 weights, one thing or another. But then we got carriers. All the practice we'd done, loading and unloading the mortar onto the truck, was useless because we were practicing then carrying the mortar on a carrier, a Wren carrier. And we got bigger, powerful carriers. Instead of the universal carriers, we got Windsor carriers made in Canada that had a booster gear on, which we were very glad of when we went in action. You know.
How did you spend your recreation time?
Well, by this time we'd moved down to a place called Mere in Wiltshire, a little village with only a couple of little pubs in it. So there were very little for the lads to do. So we started, me and Tommy Kelly started running the bingo in the canteen. And then we got another bloke with us who was a better shouter of bingo, Mufti Hughes. And so we were running this and making plenty of money. And then when the canteen shut, we'd just walk down to the village pub and sup out they had to sup, because we'd plenty of money what we're making at bingo. And I would be able to send the wife some money home. I was quite happy because I'd lost a bit of money coming down from MT Corporal, but actually I was making more running bingo as a private. So that's how it went on then, you see. We played this game well, and everybody was saying, wait till we go to the next place, we're going to run bingo. Anyway, the time we moved from Mere, went to a place called Burford, I think it was called, on the road to Oxford. And everybody's going to run bingo then. And I turns to my two mates, Mufti and Tommy. I said, don't worry about bingo. We don't want to run it here. I said, we're only just outside Oxford. They won't want to play bingo. They'll all be in Oxford. So that's what we did. And we didn't bother with running the bingo again, because you had to be in a certain place where they were lost and nothing to do.
What else did you do for
recreation? Well, we liked to have a drink, play cards. I love playing cards. I was always a bit of a gambler, and that was okay with me. The hardest thing was I had to keep writing letters, and I was a lousy letter writer. And I used to be playing cards and thinking, I've got to write a letter, I've got to write a letter. May always said, you might have well have wrote one letter and copied it all the way through. You should have done it on what's that paper called? What goes through? Carbon. She said, you should have done it on with a load of carbon copies. It'd all been the same. Oh, they were dead. Anyway, we're in England and the invasion were getting nearer. And so that's what we had to do, keep our minds occupied, and a little bit of gambling, get leave now and again, enjoy your leaves.
What did you do when you went on leave?
Oh, have a good time, take the wife out. That's why I like to make some money doing the bingo and everything like that, so we had some. But
how did you get on with the people in the towns that you were based in?
Well, we did very well, really, because we weren't as bad as these some people are, because you got in such a lot of trouble if you caused any trouble. And I actually remember one period when we were stationed in Watford, and I'm just coming out of the post office. I'd sent a telegram to the wife, and I saw this horse and cart coming down the road, and I thought, that shouldn't be going there. So I went after it, grabbed the reins, and it was going faster and faster. And at finish, I managed to get hold of its bit and turn it up off the main road, off the main street, up to a side street. And then I thought, grab its bit and pull hard. And I pulled it up to a standstill, and a big black car came up. I thought, oh, well, what's up here? And he said, what's your name and number? I said, this is not my horse and cart. I said, I don't know who the bloke is. It's a rag and bone fella, but looks at things. And he said, no, I want your name and address. He said, you'll see all here about this. And so I never thought no more about it. I said, here's the fella now coming. So when this fella come, I blew off. But anyway, it turned out this bloke were a councillor, a mayor or something of Watford. And he went to the CO, and I was up on orders for gallantry for stopping this runaway horse and cart. And they say, all right, please, because usually if you're in a town, the only word you get off for councillors and mayors is that if somebody's been drunk fighting in the pub, and for one of his lads to get praise for stopping a runaway horse was, manna from heaven.
What was the makeup of the battalion?
Well, when I first joined the regiment at Squires Gate, I thought East Lancs, I'd never heard of them. But when you get to know, you become part of a family. And there was, it had been stationed in Ireland before the war. And of course, a lot of unemployment, a lot of Northern Irish and Southern Irish had joined the battalion. So with a good mixture, there were Londoners, there was Midlanders, there were Scottish, there were Lancashire, and it was a real mix. But you get, it's your family when you get into it. I've been with it quite a few years now, and when I said at first I hadn't heard of the East Lancs, I'm certainly proud of it now. I always found that these officers who were gentlemen and not come up from the ranks were more considerate of you. You see, you'd take them somewhere in one of the staff cars, and if you pulled up at a pub where they're having a meeting or something, if it was one of the regular gentlemen officers, he'd say, "Now, Burton, I'll be here till 5 o'clock. It might only be 1 o'clock this." And he'd say, "Here's 5 shillings, get something to eat and come back for me at 5. Very considerate. But if it were one who'd come up from the ranks and was an hour captain or major, whatever, he'd just say, he'd pull up at the meeting and he'd say, "Wait here." And you'd be waiting there hours, don't move, because you didn't know when they were coming out. Whereas the gentleman officer was more considerate. He'd been used to being in charge of people, and he'd just say, "I'll be here till 5 o'clock. You can go and get something to eat if you like, and pick me up here at 5.
What about NCOs?
Oh, NCOs. Some are good, some are bad. You know, I never had any trouble with NCOs.
Anybody? What was the accommodation like in the army?
Well, it was very, very varied. Varied, because when we started off, it was holiday camp, Squiresgate, so we were lucky there, because the holiday makers had to leave while we went in. But the one thing I will say, that when I came out of the army, which was nearly 7 years later, it was very hard sleeping on a bed, because we got used to sleeping on the floor, because 90% of the time we were always sleeping on the floor. It was very rare we had beds or bunks, so it was very strange to come home after that time and sleep on the sleep on a bed. And anyway, we did have times when we could get the wives down. Actually, me and George Seedall, who was sergeant of the mortars I was with, his wife lived at Airwood, so Middleton and Airwood are very close. So she came down. My wife came down with George's wife and my little girl, who was 2 then, and they came down and we got them in a hotel in the pub with the room, so it was okay. But the only thing is, we had to be run back to camp, which was about 6 miles, every morning before 6 o'clock. And get in before Reveille, you see. So we were pretty fit to do that.
What was the worst type of accommodation you were in?
Well, the worst I remember was near Braintree, there was a place called Mushroom Farm, and the beds were like concrete blocks raised up to grow mushrooms on, I think. But they were very, very hard beds. Very hard. I think that was the worst.
Did you have any knowledge of the invasion in 1944 before it happened?
Oh yes, it was well speculated that it was happening this year, and actually we shouldn't have had the wife down in Sittingbourne, because it was a restricted zone. But anyway, we did, because we thought it might be the last time we would be with them.
What was a restricted zone?
Well, I think it was where, you see, it was near that coast at all. Because they were doing a lot of bluffing and counter-bluffing where things were happening, so you don't really know. But I know we weren't supposed to have any wives down, but we did have.
Did you do any preparation for the invasion?
Oh, yes, we went to a place called Felixstowe, and there we was practicing loading our lorries, vans, carriers, everything onto the landing craft, going out into the port a mile or so, the end of the port and end of the bay actually, and then we'd load the trucks onto the on the netting, which was going to lift them onto the boat, and Then while it were being lifted, we had to scramble up, get up the nets that hung on the side of the boats, and onto the deck, run across the deck, and get down the hold to be there when your truck come down. Or if you had to be there ready to drive it off, and we had to practice that because you might put your truck on at morning, but it'd be in different layers of stuff, layers and that, and then it might be 2 o'clock in the morning when call come, we had to get to the boats, you see. So we'd go back on the landing craft, go up the side of the boat, and it was not so pleasant when it was a black night and you had these swinging ropes because the ropes swung out and you'd just see nothing but blackness underneath you. And I always remember running across the deck and down in the bottom and doing all this. And I said, why don't they let us ride up in the trucks? And I was thinking that was a good idea until one day we saw it was an ambulance going up on these nets to go on the boat to be loaded. And the net slipped and the ambulance went straight down under the waves. And it's still there as far as I know in Felixstowe Bay. Well, we had to waterproof the trucks and chariots, get the exhaust pipe to run higher than what it was. Put it up at the side of the vehicle. And we did all this and plenty of work done and round the pumps and carburetor and things like that, we put some of this waterproof. But actually, when we went to France, we had a dry landing because we got on this landing. It was like it wasn't a landing craft, it was more like a flat piece what we just put on from the landing craft so we could get right into the beach. When we sailed for France, surprisingly, we went from the centre of London on the Thames, and the flying bombs were there all the time, the doodle bugs, and we used to watch them go over. Hope the engine wouldn't cut out, because once the engine cut out, it was good night Vienna. And so anyway, we had no English money then, because we've been this year with French, and there's a pub in this enclosure. Anyway, some of the dockers took us in and bought us a few pints. We did sail on a Liberty boat, one of those American Liberty boats, sailed down the Thames and across, and then there'd been a lot of rough seas, and so we're hanging on the outside there before we could land on the beach.
What date was this?
I should think it would be about 10 days after D-Day. And so the lads were eager to get on the land. And if you'd had it at Dunkirk, you weren't in any very big hurry, you see. So we thought, well, we're okay here. Because we had the big battleships behind us firing these. Sounded like tankers rolling over at top of you. And they were planting plenty of big shells into the German defences.
And how did you get from the Liberty boat to the land?
Well, we got on a landing craft, but it didn't go right in. And then there were like rafts, just flat, that could get right into the beach. So actually, all that preparation we'd done waterproofing won't matter, because we couldn't get in that night, and we were anchored between land and the boat in this landing craft before we got on the other. And when the tide turned, we went in at the morning, because we were peering over the side of the boat because a few German aircraft was dropping magnetic bombs, you see, and we were looking out to see that we could push them off if they come with it and smash against the side of the boat. Anyway, we're lucky again. We're very lucky all the time, really.
What was your first impressions of the beach area?
Well, we soon got through that. We didn't stop on the beach because they had made a bit of headway then, but resistance was stiffening up. We were getting reinforcements and there's some Panzers coming in. So we knew we were in for a rough time because the element of surprise had gone then. So we just kept our fingers crossed and hoped everything would turn out all right. We got to our first position, and so we're assembling the mortar. And George said, that's George Seedall, he said, we're going to have a shoot. Were you going to get some more ammo, Vic? So I went away, and while I was away, only away a few minutes getting some more shells, bombs, and the Germans must have been watching assembling the mortar because we're in like a salient, and they must have been watching from the sides. And so as soon as they put the mortar up, they must have waited for that moment, and then they did it with the morning minis, then where they send a lot of mortars together, you whine. So when I got back, George had been killed, another lad in the mortar section had been, and the others were badly wounded. So then I was at a loose end then because my mortar crew had gone.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, it was very upsetting because we'd had such a good time while we'd been staying at Sittingbourne, and George had made such a fuss of my little girl, Jean, and it was very, very sad. With losing my mortar team, I was at a loose end doing mostly infantry work in slit trenches and what have you. But as the weeks went on, we got other casualties, drivers in the anti-tank platoon, and so I was transferred to the anti-tank platoon. From then to the end of the war, I was towing an anti-tank gun.
What was the terrain like in Normandy?
Well, it was very awkward to attack because they could conceal themselves very well in these. There's so much foliage and growth of trees and what have you, and it was no good for our tanks. And so we were losing tanks and losing infantry through the tanks not being able to get through to do the job.
Were there a lot of casualties?
Oh yes, I think we lost a lot more infantry in Normandy than they'd expected, and it was, you know, very, very, I can't think how it was, why they got so many casualties, but there it is, because they had the 88mm gun, which was a good one. They had these morning minis that dropped whole loads of mortars at one time, and they give you a fright because you could hear them winding them up with a scream, and they used to morning minis scream before they set off. You hadn't time to get out at road of them. And so I remember one time, a lot of our tanks were in this field and they were nearly all burnt out or still burning. And what it turned out to be, that the Germans called them Tommy Cookers because once they hit them, they burst into flames, these tanks. Yeah, well, at one point, as we were in Normandy, we took over from the top of a hill of, I think it was the 15th Scottish, and they were in a real state because some Tiger tanks had broken amongst them and gone over the slit trenches and really made a mess of it, and they were really in a bad state of shell shock. And so we had to take over, but the tanks didn't come at us. They must have had the last fling with the Scottish there. So it was a very, very dangerous place, Normandy. We never looked as though we were going to get out of it. But eventually they kept trying different schemes. I forget the name. I think one was Goodwood, one was something, the other. But I can't just think of the name. But they said, we're going to break out now. But didn't happen. We had to do it. We're more like static warfare. And the trouble was, while you're doing that, they're getting more panzers up. But eventually we did get out.